An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Ta Hui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 38.
A Talk to the Assembly, Part 4. If you were a man, a real Chan man, when you heard me say, "Where are there old adepts appearing in the world?" you should have spit right in my face. If you don't act this way, but accept things as soon as you hear someone bring them up, you've already fallen into the secondary. Again, haven't you seen Master Lo Shan's saying, "The mystic gate has no doctrines, establishes no general principles. If you want to search for it, look before the sound." All you disciples of Buddha, real mind is not fixed, and real wisdom is not bounded. Even if I let these two lips go on talking, from now till the end of time, without a break, you still can't depend on another person's power. This is a matter in which each and every person is fully sufficient in his own right. It can neither be augmented nor diminished the least little bit. The patriarch said, "Hold to it and you lose it, and are bound to enter false roads. Let go of it, and naturally its essence has no going or staying. Just have faith in this truth of one mind. It cannot be grasped. It cannot be rejected. Then you should give up your body and your life right there. If you cannot give them up, it's because of your own hesitancy. On the last day of your life, don't blame me. The weather is hot, and you've been standing a long time." Ta Fui gave a shout and descended from the seat.
It is said to have come to the end of Taoist sutras . It has been an immensely paying pilgrimage, going step by step, as Ta Hui was growing, as he was transforming, as he was beginning, to change from an intellectual into a mystic. It was great just to watch the transformation from intellect to intuition, from mind to meditation. From an ordinary human being into an immortal, the explosion that happened to him, we have also shared a little bit of light just by being alert and aware. These are the last sutras . They are conclusive. They conclude his whole experience. Hence, they are very potential. If you were a man, and by man he means only a man of meditation, a man who is not a man of meditation is only a man in the name. There is not much difference in him and other animals. Animals are violent, so is the man. Animals are competitive, so is the man. Animals are jealous, so is the man. Animals are also capable of thinking. Not much. But still there is not any qualitative difference. The only thing that creates the difference is meditation, because no animal has shown the capacity of being meditative. Even in the vast humanity, only very rarely a man comes to the height of meditation. Hence, Tahui is perfectly right when he says, if you were a man, a real Chan man, Chan is Chinese for meditation. He is saying that you become authentically a man only through meditative transformation. And he is saying now, on his own authority, he has been a man of intellect. He began his journey as a thinker. He is ending his journey as a thoughtless silence. He certainly has the authority to define man. He has passed through the fire test himself. He has proved himself a man. Man, according to all those who know, is the capacity of going beyond the mind. The capacity to become a no mind. The capacity just to be without a single thought stirring within you. Once you have known this vastness, this silence, you will not ask any question about existence. Not that you know all the answers. You don't know even a single answer. But all questions have disappeared. Hence the need for any answer has also disappeared. In this state of no questions, no answer, but a pure consciousness, a mirror reflecting nothing, just being yourself without going anywhere, remaining here now. You attain to the ultimate bliss, which every human being has been seeking for centuries, from life to life, and goes on missing it. Because his search is in a wrong direction. He is always looking outside. And the treasure is inside. He is searching in the temples and in the synagogues and in the churches. And the person whom he is searching everywhere is just within him. If he can stop all his searching, all his desiring, all his going away, just for a single moment. And the revolution happens. Suddenly, he is no more a beggar, no more longing, desiring, hoping, waiting. Suddenly he has become the master. There is an ancient story. A king had become very old. He had only one son. And he asked a great sage, to whom he has always looked for advice and has always been given rare insights into any problem that he has brought to him. He asked him, "I am old, I have only one son, he is going to succeed me. A vast kingdom I am leaving in his hands, not knowing whether he is capable of it." Will you suggest me something that I can become certain? And the wise man, the old sage, suggested something very strange, and it was followed. The prince was sent in a chariot outside the kingdom. His clothes were taken away, and he was told that he has been expelled from the kingdom. And clothes of a beggar with a begging bowl were given to him. He could not believe. He said, "What crime I have committed?" The charioteer said, "I know nothing. I am simply following the orders given by your father. You are not allowed to enter the kingdom, otherwise you will be in jail. So simply escape far away." And the chariot returned to the palace. The young man was shocked. This is ridiculous behavior. Has his father gone insane? He was hoping to become the king, and he has become a beggar. But what can you do? Soon he was feeling hungry, thirsty, although it was very shameful, but he has to beg. On the street, like ordinary beggars, he also started Years passed, he completely forgot that he used to be a prince. He settled man has immense capacity to adapt to any condition. And when something is absolutely inescapable, you cannot do anything. A certain afternoon, in the hot sun, he was standing before a hotel, asking people that he has been hungry for 2 days. Give me something. Few coins have been dropped into his begging bowl. And then suddenly he heard the noise of a golden chariot, and in a second, instantly, he remembered his own chariot. It's strange, it looks exactly like that. And the chariot stopped, and the same charioteer, although he has become very old, got down, touched the feet of the prince, gave his robes and his crown back to him, and said, "Drop. Throw away all these beggar's clothes. First, come to a good hotel, take a good bath, clean yourself, dress well. Your father is dying, and he has remembered you, and he wants you to come immediately, because he wants to give you the kingdom and the key of his treasures by his own hand." The people in the hotel, whom he was begging, gathered around. They could not believe their eyes, because not the clothes, not the crown, not the golden chariot, but the face of the young man immediately changed. His eyes had a different look. His pride returned back. Now he was standing there with great dignity and grandeur. The beggar disappeared in a split second. Just a moment before, he was totally a different man. And just a moment afterwards, there has happened a discontinuity. The abrupt, the sudden, even he could not believe, because he could see the change even in his consciousness. The way he walked, the way he sat in the chariot, Everything has changed. The way he looked at people, it was not the same eyes. Just the remembrance, nothing else has happened. Just the awakening of the fact that he is a prince and is going to be a successor of a great kingdom. Just words. But all is changed. The same kind of miracle happens through meditation. You suddenly recognize that a great kingdom belongs to you. The kingdom of the whole existence. That you are not a beggar who was ambitious for trivia. Who was desiring this and that, who was hoping to have more power, more prestige. All symptoms of being a beggar. As one enters into meditation, all these symptoms disappear. One suddenly finds one has the kingdom, his own, one lacks nothing, one is entire, complete, fulfilled. It is for this reason that Tahui says, if you were a man, a real meditative man, when you heard me say, where are their old adepts appearing in the world? You should have spit right in my face. These are special ways of Zen. They are not understandable outside the world of Zen. Now Tahui is a master, and he is saying, when I was talking nonsense, if you were a real man, you would have spit right in my face. You could have stabbed me. It happened that one bishop in Japan wanted very much to see a Zen master Linchi. He has heard much about him, and he was certain that if he goes with the Bible and reads few beautiful statements of Jesus, particularly the Sermon on the Mount, he was sure that he can convert Linchi into being a Christian. And to convert Linchi meant converting thousands of his followers. Even the Emperor of Japan was one of his disciples. Going into the mountains and doing the tedious journey was worth. The bishop reached Linchi. And he asked that he wants to read few sentences from his master. And he hopes that you would like them. And he wants also to know what do you think about it. And he read those beautiful statements of Jesus. But he could not go more, just he has read two or three statements. And Linchi said, stop all this nonsense. Whoever has said these words will become a Buddha in some future life. But right now it is all gibberish. Just take it away. The bishop could not believe. It was not mannerly. He could have disagreed. He could have at least been polite. But people don't understand that Zen does not believe in being polite. It believes in being authentic. It is not important to follow the etiquette of the society. To Linchi, what is important is to state exactly what he feels and what he sees. He said these statements. Right now are meaningless. But whoever has said, I don't know. And I don't want to know, will become a Buddha in a future life. He is on the right line. But he has to travel much. In Zen, it is understood that there is no question of manners, there is no question of etiquette. Those are all part of the ordinary society. So when Tahui says, if you were really a man of meditation, there were many moments when I was talking nonsense, when I was only an intellectual, and is speaking as if I know, and I knew nothing. And you remained silent, and you heard as if a Buddha is speaking to you. If you had known a little bit of meditation, you would have spit right in my face. If you don't act this way, but accept things as soon as you hear someone bring them up, you have already fallen into the secondary. I have explained to you the meaning of the word secondary. It has great significance in the terminology of Zen. The secondary means the baroj. You have already fallen from the original to the baroj. If you are listening to a learned man, and you are a man of meditation, and you don't stop him, you have already fallen into the secondary. You have lost touch with the primary source of knowing. But this strange behavior, although authentic and sincere, has not gone out beyond the boundaries of Zen. I have loved Zen particularly because it does not care anything except the truth, except the experienced. It does not even allow anybody to pour nonsense into your mind. It is very difficult for a man who knows nothing of meditation to talk to a Zen master. They live in two different worlds. The communication seems to be impossible. Because you go on behaving the way you are expected by the society to behave. The Zen master behaves the way his consciousness responds in the moment. He has no ethical code to follow, no discipline beyond his own consciousness. Naturally, he is strange and wild, but that is his beauty. It is the same beauty as you will see in the wild animals, their innocence, their authenticity. Man's politeness is nothing but another name of cunningness. You go on listening to people, smiling, And inside you are saying, when this idiot is going to stop? A man used to come to my house. He was a friend of my grandfather. And I have seen them talking. And he was really a nuisance, bringing all kinds of gossips, wasting time. And my grandfather will go on saying, good, very good. I asked one day that there is a limit to everything. This story goes on every day. And it is not even that he brings new gossips and stories. I have heard those things many times, and still you go on. He said, do you think I hear him? I go on doing my own thinking. Just in between I give him the incentive that continues. The poor fellow needs someone to listen. I have remembered it. Particularly because everybody is in a need that somebody should listen. It doesn't matter what he has to say. Bertrand Russell, in one of his great insights, says that in the future I can see a possibility that there may be millions of psychotherapists in the world. That will be the biggest profession, and it is becoming bigger every day. And the only reason for its growing is not that it helps people to become healthy, its only reason is that it allows you to speak all kinds of nonsense, and a learned, well-educated man listens to you. Of course, you have to pay him. I have heard about one great psychoanalyst who was tortured by a billionaire. And he was talking such rubbish and such nonsense, but he was paying. So there was no question. You cannot stop him. He was paying the greatest fee you want. And he would go on hour after hour And it was good business, but it was very tiring and very boring. One day the psychoanalyst said to him that because I have to give 2-3 hours to you, I cannot look after other patients, so I have found a small strategy. I will leave my tape recorder. You go on talking, everything will be taped, and in the silence of night, I can listen it. It will be more valuable too, because my mind will be completely free of business and office work and other patients. So I can pay deeper attention. The billionaire said, it is a good idea. The next day, the billionaire came, went to his couch, and within 2 minutes he was going out. The psychoanalyst looked from his chair and asked, what is the matter? Where are you going? He said, I have talked to my tape recorder. Now my tape recorder is talking to your tape recorder. I thought, why should I waste my time? I have also to look to many more things. My business is far bigger than yours. And late in the night, in silence, I can also talk more freely. It is a good arrangement. Bertrand Russell says that there will be many, many people getting involved into psychoanalysis just for the simple reason that people will be so much burdened with their thoughts and nobody will have the time to listen to them. They will need professional listeners. That's what a psychoanalyst is. A professional listener. He does nothing. But even listening helps. One becomes unburdened. My grandfather said, it doesn't matter what he says, who listens? I am thinking my thoughts, and that poor fellow cannot find anybody. My grandfather died, but that man continued to come. My father was very much disturbed that this is a nuisance. Now who is going to listen to him? I said, of course, you are, because I am not going to listen. While you are alive, it doesn't look right that I should listen to him. First you die, and then if he is still alive, I will listen. But right now, It is your responsibility. He said, you are strange. You don't have anything to do. Why can't you just sit and listen to him? I said, right now it is your duty. Your father has died, not my father. You are having the whole heritage. This man is part of the heritage. One day he was very much busy, and the man knocked. He told me, somehow, tell him that I am not at home. I went out and I told the man that he is inside, very busy, and he has asked me to tell you that he is not at home. So you can please decide yourself. It is good that you should go. He said, what? He is inside and he says that he is not? I said, that's exactly the truth. And my father was listening. So that man said, then I will come in. I said, that is up to you. My father was very angry at me. When the man left, torturing him after 2-3 hours, he took very much revenge with me. I said, you are taking revenge with me. In fact, you are angry with that man. And it is your father who has given you the heritage. I am nobody in this whole business. He said, but why did you say that I am in? I had told you that I am out. I said, I told him the whole thing. Why should I lie? And you insist always, when you ask things to me, where you have been, and you say, don't lie. Now remember, never say to me, don't lie. Sometimes one needs to lie. Do you understand? He said, this is a different thing. I said, it is the same thing. You have taught me continuously to be true. And I will remain true, whatsoever the consequence. Either you should tell me that I am allowed to lie and you will not again insist for the truth. He said, let me think about it, because this is a very difficult decision, to allow you to lie. It is better to listen to that man. There is no need to lie. You should say the truth. You have done right. But I said, you should start doing the same work my grandfather was doing. He was never tired. In fact, By the evening he used to wait for him. Many times he used to ask me, he has not come yet. Just learn the secret. He said, what was his secret? Because I never came close to them. I never even wanted to be acquainted with this man. I said, his secret was very simple. He never listened. He just allowed him to talk. It will take a little time, but it is a good discipline. In society, you go on tolerating people telling lies. You know they are lying. But you will not say on their face that you are lying. You will pretend that you agree. Society requires you to be hypocrites. And that's the difficulty. When you come in contact with Zen, hypocrisy is not allowed at all. It is the only small current of non-hypocrite people in the world. Otherwise, can you think of a master telling to his disciples that if you think I am talking nonsense, you should spit on my face? But in Zen it happens. Disciples have beaten masters. Masters have been beating, that can be understood. There was a monastery, it had two wings, and the master had a beautiful cat. And every monk, there were 1,000 monks, 500 in one wing, 500 in another wing, and just in the middle was the master's hut. The cat used to move in this wing, in that wing, and it was so beautiful and so loving, that every wing, every monk tries to catch that cat as long as possible. Sometimes there was a quarrel, a fight, because the left wing wanted the cat and the right wing was not allowing them. The master became tired. One day he called all the monks and said, it has to be decided. This cat has become a disturbance. Say something, do something which shows your meditation. If you cannot, anybody from any wing, if somebody can act in a way that shows that he has meditative insight, the cat will be given to that person, to that wing. If nobody can say anything that leaves me only one possibility, I will cut the cat in two and give both the wings half of the cat, the monks were sad. They tried, but nobody could find how to sow your meditation. What to do, what to say. And you cannot deceive the master. That was absolutely true. Because nobody came out, the master had to cut the cat in two, gave those dead pieces of the cat to both the wings. Monks were crying, but it was no use. The master has given the chance, they could not sow their meditation. Just then, Rinzai, a monk who had gone for some work in the city, came back and heard the whole story. He could not understand that 1,000 monks were there, and you could not prevent that old fellow from killing the cat. He went in and slapped the master. The master said, "It is too late. If you had been here before, the cat would have been saved." This can happen only in the atmosphere of Zen. The disciple hits the master, and the master accepts with gratitude and says with appreciation, that where you had been, if you were here, the poor cat would have been still alive. Not a single monk came to tell me that what nonsense you are talking. Killing the cat and it would have been enough. But they all remained silent. They could not give any response. Zen has created a very special world, not of etiquette and manners and hypocrisy, but simply authenticity. Rinzai hitting the master is simply showing the truth as he feels, that it was absolutely nonsense to kill the poor cat. There was no need. The very idea was wrong. And you need a good slap for that. Never do such a thing again. anywhere else in the world, such a disciple would have been expelled. But in Zen, the disciple was appreciated. That where have you been? You should have been, you could have saved the cat, and you could have saved me killing unnecessarily a poor cat, a dutiful cat, and it was my cat. And I will miss it. If you go on listening to anything that you feel in your consciousness and awareness as nonsense and stupidity, you should do something to stop it. Otherwise, you are falling yourself in the secondary. The secondary means you are falling from truth into the world of lies. You are falling from silence into the world of language, society, social manners. Again, have not you seen Master Losan saying, the mystic gate has no doctrines. Doctrines are created by philosophers. Doctrines are created by those who do not know. It is a very strange phenomenon. Those who do not know feel the wound of not knowing. It hurts. They want something to cover it up. They create doctrines, Christian doctrines, Hindu doctrines, Jaina doctrines. Those doctrines help them to forget their ignorance. They don't become wise, they don't become enlightened, but for the time being, the device helps them to forget that they are sick, that they are ignorant. But it is dangerous. It is always good to know that you are sick, because then some treatment is possible. It is dangerous to hide your ignorance, because that will keep you ignorant forever. And the more you hide it, the more it goes on growing like cancer inside you. Ignorance is exactly like the cancer of the soul. Don't hide it. If it is there, recognize it so that it can be removed. It can be operated. Gautam Buddha used to say again and again, that I am not a philosopher, I am a physician. You can see why he insisted that. That I am not here simply to fill up your wounds, give you a false notion that you know. I am here to heal you. And healing needs a recognition that you are ignorant. Just to recognize oneself that I am ignorant and all my knowledge is borrowed is a great beginning. The mystic gate has no doctrines, establishes no general principles. I have been asked throughout my life that what are my general principles? Because every religion has its own catechism, its own established doctrines, principles, disciplines. I have been in difficulty to explain to people that I don't have any general principles. I cannot have. And anybody who has is wrong, because life goes on changing. You cannot have fixed and established principles. They will become your prejudices. And in a changing life, your prejudice will always create a distance between you and the real. And you will act out of your prejudice, and your action will not be adequate, because it will not respond to the reality. Another small Zen story. There were two ancient temples, very antagonistic to each other. Their enmity has been very ancient, traditional. Their priests were not on talking terms. Both the priests had two small boys as their disciples and as their helpers to worship, to bring things from the market, or to do other small things which those old priests could not do. Both have insisted to the boys that don't ask anything, don't talk, don't even say good morning if you meet on the way. The other temple's boy. But boys are boys. They were very curious. And in fact, The old priests had made them more curious. What is the matter? And they were feeling alone also with those old people. They wanted to be friendly with each other. And one day finally, one boy there stood on the crossroads, waited for the other boy to come, and he asked, "Where are you going?" And the other boy said, very philosophically, "Wherever the wind takes." And the first boy was very much shocked. He thought that my master is right, that those people are very strange. It was wrong of me. I wanted to be friendly. And the answer he gave cut me short. It is not a friendly answer. And I could not find what else to say to such a man who is saying, "Wherever the wind takes." He told to his master that, "Forgive me, but out of curiosity I asked that boy just a simple question, where are you going?" And he said, "Wherever the wind takes." "You were right, I am sorry. But I am feeling very much ashamed that I could not answer him. Because I could not find in that moment what will be the appropriate answer to this." The master said, "I had warned you, but you didn't listen. Now remember, tomorrow is 10 in the same place. And he will come, because he goes to the market. Ask him again, where are you going? And if he says, wherever the wind takes, just tell him, and if the wind is not blowing, are you going anywhere or not?" The boy repeated it, rehearsed it, prepared himself, became perfect by the morning, reached the place 1 hour before, was standing there, repeating in his mind, it was a question of his prestige. And the boy came, and he asked, "Where are you going?" And the boy said, "Wherever the legs take me." Now the whole preparation was useless, because the answer was inadequate. He was at a loss what to do. He went crying to the master. He said, "Those people are very inconsistent. He has changed his answer. Today he said, wherever the legs take me." The master said, "Don't be worried. Prepare for the next answer. Tomorrow, when he says, wherever my legs take, tell him that if you were born cripple, lame, will you be going anywhere or not? Just puzzle him. It is a question not only of your prestige, now it is a question of the prestige of our temple, of our whole heritage, our tradition. And the boy tried. He could not sleep the whole night. Many times in the dream he saw the boy. In the morning he got ready, reached the place. The boy came and he asked, "Where are you going?" And the boy said, "To fetch some vegetables from the market." Such is the life. You cannot respond to life with principles, established doctrines. You have to be alert and conscious and responsive to the moment. You have to be unprepared. Life is not an examination of a school or college or university. It is not even for a single moment the same. This morning Tahui was saying, "Don't remember what I have said to you yesterday, because today I am not going to say it." And he was right. This morning it was raining so much, and the whole sky has changed. There is no sign of any rain. Life is constantly changing. Hence, those who want to be in tune, in synchronicity, in an organic unity with existence, can't afford to have fixed principles, general principles, established doctrines, philosophies. They can only have an alert and conscious being. Then whatever the situation, they will respond accordingly. Not according to any principle, but according to the situation that they are encountering. There is a story in the life of the founder of Hasidism, Baal Shem Tov. One woman came to him and said that, "I am without a child. Your master had blessed my mother And because of his blessings, I was born. Otherwise, my mother was also waiting for the child. So Baal Sen blessed her. But the blessing did not work. The woman waited and waited. Years passed, and she came with anger that you are thought to be a great master, greater than your own master. But your blessing has not worked. Baal Sen said, did I say that it will work? Had I given you any promise? But the woman was insistent that then why your master's blessing has worked? Baal Sen said, because your mother has not asked for a child. I was present. My master has blessings for everybody. Whoever used to come, he used to bless. It was not especially for your mother. And if you were born, it is just an accident. And in the first place, your mother has not asked. And you had asked. That makes all the difference. Your mother has simply loved the master, and the master, out of his love, used to bless everybody. But the situations are different. First, your mother had not asked for anything special. You are an accident, you are not a byproduct of the blessings. Secondly, you asked, and whenever one desires, one becomes incapable of receiving the blessing. Thirdly, my master used to bless everybody. It was just his habit. I don't bless everybody. It is not my habit. My master was himself. I am myself. You asked, I simply thought that there are 50-50 chances. If I bless this woman, there are 50 chances always she may have a child. Why miss? If she has a child, my blessings have worked. And there will be a miracle. If my blessings don't work, I know how to get out of it. I can prove that you are an accident. Nobody is produced by blessings. One should live life without any prejudice and without any doctrines, without any religions, without any philosophies. Only then one can live in innocence, in purity, in spontaneity. Master Losan's statement has to be remembered. The mystic gate has no doctrines, establishes no general principles. If you want to search for it, look before the sound. I have told you that the Bible says, in the beginning there was word, and God was with the word, and God was the word. Now, according to Zen, it is rubbish. Because a word needs meaning. That's the difference between a sound and a word. When you listen to the waterfall, you don't say the waterfall is speaking words. You say there is the sound of running water. Sound is meaningless. Certainly there cannot be word in the beginning, because there was nobody to give it meaning. It is better to say there was sound. That's what is the standpoint of Hinduism. They say in the beginning was Omkar. Om is just a sound. It is not a word. Hence in Sanskrit there is no alphabet for Om. Just a symbol. It is not part of the alphabet. It is on the margin. In the beginning was Om, just a sound. But Zen goes still further. Master Losan is saying, if you want to search for it, look before the sound. Because even the sound needs two things at least to clash. That's why the sound of one hand clapping cannot be heard. There cannot be any sound. If you want to know the ultimate, look before the sound. What is before the sound? Before the sound is silence. Now you can see these three statements. There was silence in the beginning. There was sound in the beginning. There was word in the beginning. And you can see the difference. The word is the most superficial. The sound is a little better, but silence is perfect. And if you don't say it, then it is even more perfect. If you simply remain silent without saying silence, if you are asked what was in the beginning, and you remain just silent, not answering, that's exactly right. Otherwise, silence, sound, words, and you go on falling into the secondary. Remain in the primary. Remain in the fundamental. Remain in the ultimate. And the ultimate is beyond sound. All you disciples of Buddha, the real mind is not fixed. And real wisdom is not bounded. Even if I let these two lips go on talking from now till the end of time without a break, you still can't depend on another person's power. This is a matter in which each and every person is fully sufficient. In his own right, you don't have to depend on anybody else. You contain your own truth. You are absolutely independent in your being. Your freedom is absolute. And there is no way to disturb it. You can forget it, but you cannot lose it. It can neither be augmented nor diminished the least little bit. The patriarch said, the patriarch always refers to Bodhidharma. He is the first patriarch in China. Hold to it and you lose it. In the very holding, you saw that it is separate from you. Your very holding it shows your misunderstanding, your ignorance. Hold to it and you lose it. And are bound to enter false roads. Let go of it, and naturally its essence has no going or staying. Let go of it, and it is there. It has always been there. The truth is your very essence. So there is no need to cling to it. You are it. You cannot be otherwise. Just have faith in this truth of one mind. It cannot be grasped. It cannot be rejected. Then you should give up your body and your life. Right there. The moment you understand that your essence is eternal, you will drop the idea of my body, my mind, my life. The moment you become aware of the eternal in you, you will not confine it to my and mine. It is neither my nor yours. It simply is. We are all part of one organic unit. If you cannot give them up, it is because of your own hesitancy. On the last day of your life, don't blame me. Tahui is reminding you in his last statement that if you don't lose your ego, if you don't lose your identity with the body and mind, if you don't become pure meditation, then don't blame me. At the time of your death, because then you will see body is going, mind is going, and you had remained always confined to the body and to the mind, and you never looked beyond. So when the body and mind is going, people fall unconscious. The shock is so terrible that they cannot remain conscious. Only a meditator can remain conscious, because he knows. Even before death, many times, whenever he was in meditation, body was lying there, mind was there, and he was far above. He was a totally different phenomenon. A man of meditation dies consciously, hence he does not die. He dies joyously, because to him death comes as a freedom. As a freedom from the bondage of body-mind. As if suddenly all the walls have fallen and you have become the holy sky. Tahui's last statement is so beautiful and so poetic. The weather is hot, and you have been standing a long time. Tahui gave a shout and descended from the seat. In Zen, the shout of the master has a significance which has not been understood anywhere else. There have been masters even who will not speak at all. They will simply ascend on the platform, look around the audience, give a good salt look back again, their salt will be such as if suddenly a lion has come in and roared. Just think of yourself coming across a lion and the roar. Your mind will stop. Your breathing will stop. Your heart will lose a beat. The Zen master's salt is simply a way to give you an experience of silence. He has tried in many ways, through many aspects, explaining to you, and finally he gives you a little taste. He gives you a salt suddenly the salt naturally, everybody becomes silent. What has happened? And the master is gone, leaving you in silence, giving you the taste which he has been explaining all the way. Nirvana has a stick hiding behind. She wanted me to hit poor Niskriya. I said, Niskriya is German and he will not understand it. Rather than becoming silent, he will stand up to fight. And to disturb poor Niskriya's work is not right. I had to persuade her to leave the stick. It is not needed here. I can manage without a salt. Whenever I become silent while speaking in the middle of my sentences, you become silent.